This episode is about the music and sound in minutes 16 through 20 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, which starts with Han meeting Beckett's gang and ends with him getting thrown into a cell with a hungry, vicious beast. Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today is all about minutes 16 through 20 of Solo, A Star Wars Story. I'm so excited to have Darth Chaco returning to the show.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing me back. I had an amazing time last time and really appreciate it. So I'm happy to come on to talk about all of the films at any point in time. So yeah, I'm always here.
Yeah, last time you had The Last Jedi, but it was like toward the end of the film. And so now we're toward the beginning of the film of this one. So the conversation will be more of an Act 1 conversation rather than an Act 3 conversation.
Which means there's a little bit, you know, less meat coming up behind it, but that's okay.
There's a lot of firsts.
Yes.
A lot of establishing characters and establishing relationships. It really is different how it's interesting how the conversation develops over the course of like getting to know characters, being in different parts of their arc.
Yeah. Especially because Han really doesn't even know who he is at this point in time. Like, literally, the last scene, he got his last name, so he's still trying to figure things out, and yeah, it's one of the things I appreciated about this scene in particular, is it shows that he is not some, you know, wide-eyed kid that will be led. He's always always thinking and always putting pieces together.
Do you feel like he is like how Han, as you knew him before seeing this film, like how actualized do you think he is in this at this point?
I think this actually shows his kind of heart of gold. Like, he wants to be part of a crew, but at this point in time, he's just always getting yanked around by someone or another, and you can see why you would get soured on the idea. So I did think that they did a good job with this, and plus, just in general, overall, I do enjoy this movie. It's a fun adventure film, you know.
I'm glad. This movie obviously is very hit or miss with people in the fandom, and I think it comes down to like how familiar or how much people like this kind. I don't know if genre is the right word, but this sort of story to begin with, since there's no Jedi in it, so it kind of without that. It sort of maybe leaves some audience feeling like it's not what they expected from Star Wars, but other parts of the audience that maybe preferred like these parts of the stories maybe like it even more. I don't know.
It's kind of a palate cleanser for me. Like, I can turn this movie on anytime in the background and like do other stuff, and it's great. It's also like the first swashbuckling Star Wars film where it's just like there's just always something happening, always jumping from one place to another, and there's not a whole ton of quiet moments. Plus it just has kind of that humorous and lighter tone. It's not carrying the momentum of one whole trilogy or two whole trilogies or three whole trilogy, you know what I mean? Like, it's
That's
not
true.
Carrying that weight. You know, I can't put on like The Last Jedi in the background, because then I stop whatever I'm doing and I'm sucked into the film, and then I get sad and it changes your day. You know, this doesn't happen with this film.
It's interesting you say that, because John Powell, the main composer for this film, is not a big Star Wars person. Prior to going into this film, he was, of course, a big John Williams person, like really deep into John Williams's work, but not necessarily like the, you know, deepest into Star Wars. However, he does know a thing or two about scoring like heist movies. And to him, this felt like a heist movie. And he sort of approached it that way. Like, he scored The Italian Job, and he felt like this kind of reminded him of that a little bit.
I didn't realize he scored The Italian Job. I love that movie.
Well, there you go.
It makes sense, and I actually appreciate that. I feel like if you are very into stuff, kind of like what you said, there's no Jedi in this movie. I feel like Star Wars as the mainline stories are heavily driven by the Force. And if you have something that is devoid of the Force, I think we should feel that. It should feel different and separate and have those like ethereal Force feeling moments only show up when applicable. Otherwise, it ends up being kind of watered down. We kind of get that in The Mandalorian, and you don't get that feeling until Grogu starts doing something weird. But other than that, you're sitting in a Western. This in particular, you know, this the section that we're listening to kind of has that, the military march with the, you know, it just has that sound, but they play around with, you know, the tone of it going from serious to lighthearted back to serious and, you know, in and out of those without doing any of the Force feeling stuff.
Yeah, the music, like the way that the Force is portrayed musically is very different. It's distinct. And I'm glad, I like to see it like remain distinct.
Yeah.
Let's actually listen to the beginning of this set of minutes, get a little into it, and then I'll share a little bit about what I know and we can react to it.
Hey, Beckett, you said we were here to pull a quick job.
Yeah.
Well, this ain't a quick job, it's a war.
There's always something with you. Hey, T-Holler, that's what we came for. Board operations must be this way.
They are, but the Major said we're
You can barely hear the music.
Can't go that way and die.
That's exactly what happened.
Who's the ranking officer?
I listened to it a lot, so I'm good.
Yeah. Well, the music there is, it's from the track Mimban Battle. Mimban, I don't really know how to say that. This is a Leia thing. Mimban. I don't know why is that such a tough word for me. And it's only on the deluxe edition of the soundtrack. It's 1M10A-B is the cue name. And here, the explosions, like the sound design is obviously a very big part of the scene too. It's not just the music, which is why it's barely audible at the very, very beginning. Do you have any feelings about this piece of music or this theme? Do you know what theme this is?
I know what theme you're referring to, and I do like his... We're in like a landing zone for a battle, right? And we're seeing walkers get dropped off and all this stuff. And so that the gives you the feeling of, like the anticipation as they're swooping in to drop into this battle. Mm. Like the personal portion of it hadn't started yet. That's kind of how I felt, you know, feel about it.
Did you say the personal portion?
Yes, because our main character, yes, the battle is happening, but our main character has not entered the combat portion yet. And so this is like that, you know, traveling to the fight's about to start feel for me.
Well, the fight has been... It's been underway, but we don't stay here for more than a few minutes is a thing. Like when we cut here, it cuts from Han getting his last name to him, like really jumping from explosions. But he himself, we don't see him like himself do much. We see him experience other people, like, you know, the major. And I don't know, it kind of feels like he's thrown into this like whole scene, mm-hmm. like, holy crap, like he's in this big skirmish and there's a lot of explosions happening. But you're right, he hasn't like really found his footing yet, and then it's over.
And while I am a little disappointed because there are some scenes that were cut that were him, because the last thing you heard before this scene starts was he was going to the Imperial Academy on Kurita.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have scenes of him, you know, in there and getting kicked out of the school and all this stuff. But I think it works just having us dumped into the scene just like he is. or just like he feels.
I actually agree with you that I'm sad that those scenes were cut. I mean, I read the novelization and it is like in there. And I'm sure you have too. And I'm kind of a sucker for any sort of training, like any glimpse of training that we see, no matter what, like whether it's like Jedi or like, you know, I like seeing more with how people got to where they got rather than just like seeing flashbacks and then seeing the current, you know, I like seeing that. I get that it's harder to maybe work into a story or into a film maybe, or maybe it takes up too much time, but I like it.
Yeah, I like it. And that's it works super well in a book, but I see the thematic of like, this is going to slow down the pace of the story, you know, visually when we only have this much time to play around with. But yeah, I agree. I always want to see those in between scenes of like, we're here, we cut to here. What happened in between? Mostly because in my mind, those scenes are super awkward. And I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, they are. They're super awkward. And I'm sure they're hard to write and hard to film without justice too. But still, we can dream. So in the complete catalog of the musical themes of Star Wars, Frank Lehman calls that theme the gang. So we can look out for that throughout the rest of the movie, the gang. Now, underneath that sort of melody is that militaristic, is that sort of battle drums, like, mm-hmm. and the rhythm.
They get to march with it, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is definitely very classic, you know, makes sense for what's happening.
It's classic, but it also kind of has, I feel like once they start talking and you get to see that these people aren't serious, and they're kind of joking around with each other largely, I feel like that's where the tone, like it starts off just very downbeat, dum, 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 and then it starts playing with that a little bit with the dum, 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 it feels a little more lighthearted and it plays around with them as their humor starts coming up.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I was going to bring that up too, where it starts to feel more like a modern, like this feels more John Powell here. It like, I, this doesn't sound John Williams at all. Like mm-hmm. that this part, like I feel more of the comedic beats coming through. And also it might just be, not just a change in the music, but also the film itself is not just, it's not like the only thing that has changed is the composer. There are a lot of things that are different about this and the whole exchange and Beckett himself also and just Han. I don't know, their interactions are so funny in a way. So I'm going to actually play where that ends out. Because on the track, the Mimban battle, the beginning of the track, which started in the last set of minutes, is this really, it starts with the Imperial March, actually. It starts with the Imperial March mm-hmm. with these like strings on top, and it's really, really terrifying. It's actually like a really terrifying, scary like beginning of the cue. And the end of the cue, which is where we are right now, how it fades out at the end, that's when it starts to get more funny. And you can tell that there is like talking happening over it. So I'm going to play a little bit of that so you can hear, because then we're going to do a little bit of a time jump. So this is like a vamp.
Yeah.
Like you could keep it looping for a while. You know, you could tell. Now this is when Beckett is sort of talking out a plan.
I just love strings. Me too. I don't know why. This makes me so happy.
It's because they're the best instrument. And then that fades out there as Beckett is sort of saying, you know, you want to live Sparky very much, then shut up and do what your captain tells you. And then what's interesting is the track actually skips back to the middle of it. And I'll show you what I mean in a second. So like if I go back to 52 seconds into that track on the soundtrack, that's what we hear next. And it's after Beckett says, let's go. Like, so there's a brief silence. Beckett says, let's go. And then we get this little battle cry. So that's, yeah.
And that's the hill charge and like battle cry, just like you said.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, while this whole portion is not quite my favorite portion of the movie, but I still enjoy how well these themes work with what's happening on screen and how it like builds up your feeling of, okay, now these guys are fighting together. This is Han with what might become his new crew. And then you move forward with that, which is not exactly what happens.
What do you think of Han? You said something earlier where we're starting to see Han's heart of gold, like he just wants to be part of a crew. And I think that's interesting because when people say Han has a heart of gold, sometimes that can be interpreted as Han is a little rebel inside, or like Han, you know, is attached to, you know, better ideals than he lets on. But I think what it comes down to is he wants to be part of a crew, no matter what.
Yeah.
And say, even when he joins the rebels, like he ends up helping them out in the end. Like he talks big game about just walking away with the money, but he comes back and he helps. But it's not necessarily because he's a diehard rebel politically. He has a crew. And that's what he's there for. Possibly. I mean, that's a possible read.
Yeah, I read it similar, where it's not that he secretly wanted to be a rebel, but A, having a crew, B, he knows the Empire is wrong.
Yeah, and
he's,
we do see that
fight them. Mm-hmm. He's just not going to fight them. He's like, yeah, you guys are just stupid. You know, he's like, we are the invading aliens. Like, what are you talking about? But he's still there. He's still going to do it because he's like, just whatever. And having a crew is like, I'd much rather be doing something with these people. But even after all this time, he still cares for Kira and he still wants to get back there. So there's still this, like, there's like a childlike innocence that he's holding on to, but the world keeps like trying to punch it out of him. And so he has to like lock it down. That's kind of how but it's not about, I don't think it's necessarily about like good or evil. It's about,
he's trying to survive.
Guilt and happiness.
Interesting. What guilt? What do you think? Where do you think that comes in?
He has no problem being a part of bad things, but he feels guilty about it. You know what I mean? So it's, I feel like he's motivated more by not wanting to feel the guilt than he is by wanting to do good. I don't want to do bad. I just, you know, he'd rather be neutral.
That's such a human thing, is sometimes we're motivated by the avoidance of pain more than anything.
Yeah, that's very, very apt, because I think of, I know there's just crazy stuff going on in the world and stuff. And I see a lot of people are more afraid of being labeled as something than they are fighting for it. So it's the same type of thing. I just don't want to be called this. And you're like, but you're doing that. Like, but don't call me that. Okay, gotcha.
Interesting. So
not to go political or anything at all.
I think that's vague and also applies to so many things. No, even if people are listening to this in 5 years, there will be things that it applies to. So right after that battle cry, we have quite a bit of time with no music, and also the color palette of the scenery changes as well. Whereas before, during the battle, it's very orange, fire colors, you know, warm colors, basically. Goes from very warm palette to very cool. It's very gray, ash, no more fire. And it's after the skirmish, of course. And this is when Han is trying to get into Beckett's good graces, trying to thank him, and he's a little bit rejected. He's a little bit rejected. So
that's also where we get the reveal of the Ardenian.
Yes.
He's walking and his pants start slipping and another set of arms come down to pull it up. I don't know, that just made me laugh when I first saw it in theaters.
I don't even remember if I remembered that, but it's one of those things that I have trouble seeing it like at home. And I think it's because also in general, it's shot so dark that I feel like it takes a really good monitor, or takes a really big screen or something, or paying really close attention to make out details sometimes. And that is one thing about this movie that I struggle with.
Yeah, it is a little difficult here, but as a lore person myself, I'm always like picking out like, okay, what model walker is that? Like stuff no human really needs to know.
So what model walker is this?
Well, I was mostly looking at the chicken walkers that they were deploying in the previous scene where the ship was landing. And I mean, you do hear the sound of AT-ATs in this scene. You don't see them, but you can hear them. And I don't know. It also makes me happy. Little sound design stuff where when the camera angle changes, you now hear the walker on the other side. Like, I just like that they care about stuff like that.
Oh, that's a good point. Did you hear that in this scene?
Yeah, when they're walking.
The ATL, you know,
after the battle. Yeah,
after the battle.
Mm-hmm. You can hear a walker walking on your right side, and then when he catches up and the camera changes, you still hear it walking away in the left side. And I just always really like those small touches like that. I've tried to do my own projects where I have sound design. And it's difficult, or it's not difficult, it's time consuming, very time consuming. So I appreciate attention to small details.
I'm curious, now that you have tried to do your own sound design in your own projects, what about it is the most challenging or the most time consuming that like maybe you wouldn't have figured out until you started trying it?
Oh man. So it was a proof of concept. And I was making an audio version of a Darth Maul comic, and so it's pulling in music to making sure, you know, it works right and doesn't step over the voices. It's directing the voice actors, but at the end of it, there's a lightsaber battle. So I'm making lightsaber swing sounds. I'm making ship noises. Like they're on a ship and have a ship fly past them. And it's not like I have ship models. So I'm like grabbing, this is, you know, a bomber from the late 40s. And this is a speedboat. And if I can merge these sounds together, then I can get something akin to what I'm hearing in my head. There's a scene where Maul burns through the door, and that leads to the big battle. So I'm having like the sound of the lightsaber that's muffled because it's on the other side of the door, and then the sizzling as it's slowly melting through, and then the dripping of the molten metal, and then after it gets to open to a certain degree, he like force pushes it open, so then I have to have the metal wrenching as it bends in, and like and I'm like having to find the, like, okay, submarine door sounds, and like trying to like put all this stuff together, and it's just way more stuff, and the whole thing is like 8 minutes long, and only like the last, and I was learning as I was doing.
That's a really long scene to do sound for.
Oh man, it was like having to animate every lightsaber swing sound, and then it cutting through people, and then their reactions to it.
Oh my gosh! Well, there's a lot. That is quite a lot.
I'll send it to you. It's please. Not very good, but
did you ever publish it?
It's on you. It's the very first thing I ever did on YouTube.
Wow, you started super ambitious.
I am so goddamn ambitious. It pains me. I hate all the content that I make, by the way, because none of it is anywhere near what I want it to be. But I'm like, no, done is better than good, I guess. It'll get better as you make it. As the more you make, the better it'll get. Just
close your eyes. I feel that. I feel this very hard. Yeah. Well, so now we meet Val. And before that, we meet Lieutenant Bolandin, and he is the one that's telling everyone what their next plan is, I guess. What am I talking about? Okay, we already met Val, but she was just like, none of your business, we're full up. Stick to your own stuff. And then they go to this post-skirmish meeting with the lieutenant, and the lieutenant is, you know, very, very by the book Empire here. He has the accent. He has the voice. He wants to bring peace and prosperity to the galaxy.
Install a regime. He has no free will of his own.
Yeah. He wants an advance party of 10 men. And Han's like, great, more mud. So we can see how he got kicked out of the academy already.
Yeah, he's a bit mouthy.
He's a bit mouthy.
Sometimes you got to read the room.
What I'm fascinated by is how he has gone so far being so mouthy and surviving. Because he is a scrapper. He is a survivor. And he still has the courage, the gall, the whatever spirit it is in him to still say stuff like this.
He's the gifted kid in school. Like he's not the dumb stoner kid who like doesn't know what he's doing, but he's the gifted kid that's extremely lazy because he can be. You know, that's how I read Han, at least in these early years. I think he does legitimately just get lazy.
But he seemingly doesn't fear repercussion as much as some other characters might. Or maybe that's because he's a hero, so we have to see him being a little bit spunky all the time. Just how would he last this long?
Because they're just sending bodies into a meat grinder, you know? He can still, if you can hold a gun and pull a trigger, you're in. That's what we need. Does he have a pulse? Like, even then, maybe, I don't know.
That's true, but even in smuggling, I guess the sweet talking and the mouthiness would come in handy too, because he can convince people to see what he is offering and to believe him or something. But yeah, Han's a character, that's for sure. So Han does eventually step in line, or at least pretend to, after the lieutenant's like, you got a problem, trooper? And he's like, no problem, sir. And so again, this whole meeting, this whole scene does not have music. So we are just present with the conversation.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I'm curious on how you feel about Alden Ehrenreich's performance as Han overall. If he felt like Han, if he should have done more Harrison Ford, your thoughts on that?
I feel really neutral about his performance. I'm not like super, I think I don't have, I don't know what I was expecting. I don't know what I wanted going in. And I didn't really have expectations. Now, I don't really connect Alden's performance to Harrison. Like, I had to keep reminding myself. Like, it didn't immediately connect me to Han Solo. It felt like a different person to me. Or, but, you know, some lines and everything did. Like, there were hints of him reminding me of Harrison Ford or of Han Solo. But I'm not really sure I seamlessly connected that personally. Mm-hmm. Now I did more easily connect Lando though.
Yeah.
What do you?
Yeah, I thought.
What about
I
you?
I thought he killed it. Yeah, for me, I think his physical acting I thought was actually perfect for like a young Han, because there's some scenes where he's talking and trying to show his bravado, but you can kind of see the facade, you know, underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And I can definitely see it as someone that's younger and less sure of themselves, but will grow into that. But then there are other things like, you know, the voice and stuff doesn't quite match up for me in the way that
yeah.
I would want. But I also don't want him doing a Harrison Ford impression.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I think as Star Wars fans have to like understand like certain bits of it. A, like people's voices do change over time, but like I don't want to live in a world where, and this may be controversial, but I don't think Mark Hamill should play Luke forever. Like if we do more than what we just got in Book of Boba Fett, I think he needs to be recast, because it creeps me out, honestly. But also we need these characters to be larger than the actors that portrayed them.
Yeah, it's really tough. I agree with you about like certain mannerisms, especially physical things about the performance felt like Han, like it was checking boxes for me. Like Alden's performance was checking off Han boxes for me, but just emotionally it just somehow didn't connect. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a voice thing, because I think the voice is I think what we hear is almost more important than what we see sometimes, and I think that is, I think it's something that we don't realize. But I mean, I know for sure there have been like studies on, you know, people making videos, like whether it's better to have better audio quality or better video quality. And hands down, like it's better to have better audio quality. It's number one. Like, and I think that's also why for me, the Boba Fett Luke didn't work. It didn't work for me, not because of the way that he looked, but because of the way that he sounded. But yeah, it is hard. I think maybe why Alden's performance didn't feel as believable for me, even though it was believable in my head, just not in my heart. I think it's maybe because he looked a little bit too young, like a little bit too, there wasn't enough of an age gap between that Han Solo and Harrison Ford's Han Solo that I think someone would change that much. I feel, and I'm not sure if there was a bigger age gap for Lando. I feel like Harrison Ford, maybe I'm saying something wrong, but like Harrison, or maybe it's because we see Harrison Ford so much in the original trilogy, but Harrison Ford seems like his character was, or is he younger? Is Harrison Ford younger than?
Harrison Ford was like, I want to say the character was like 32 or something like that. I apologize. There's a Formula One race happening. They sound like, they don't sound like normal cars. That sounds
they
like
don't.
High powered go karts or something.
It's Han out there. There's a Corellia. It's Han Corellia. yeah, I think it's like this Han Solo looks mid like 20s, like mid 20s or so, or 30,
like 30,
and the other one's like exactly. And so I just, but then if I, but then in the book it says, or I think it, I think he's supposed to be like 20 or maybe even younger. And so I'm just having trouble like understanding that this is a, supposed to be a super young Han. And then he's like a young, but just a little bit older Han in the originals. I think like, I think they could have cast someone much. I think maybe it would have worked for me better if Han were cast even younger. It like, if it were baby, if this were like a little kid Han Solo story, like I could,
yeah,
I wouldn't
on.
Mind. Yeah. Yeah. But it's like two adults that don't look that different in age to me.
That's fun. No, now I'm curious. I'm gonna have to look it up and get back to you. But how old this actor is portraying him now, and how old Harrison Ford was originally, and I would bet money they're the same age.
Right, something like something pretty close.
Yeah, no, you got a point there. I will say, like, Han's energy in the original trilogy is that of a crew leader. And this is not someone that can run a crew, and being someone who, you know, was formerly a supervisor at my firm with like 16 people under me, that does change you. You have to speak different. You have to carry yourself differently, so that you can command these other people who have maybe been doing this longer than you. You have to be able to command them and have them trust in your leadership. And so, yeah, that does change how you talk and how you walk and how you look. You know, I don't like it. I can do it, but this Han is not at that point yet.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't think I've ever been in that sort of leadership position. I don't think. I certainly don't like to be in that situation, so I probably don't seek that kind of leadership very much for that reason.
I prefer to be like friends with the leader, where they're like, okay, you just do your own thing. I'm like, cool. I won't bother you. You don't bother me, but you run them. Cool. That's where I like to be, but
I prefer the one that's like hiding so that no one ever notices me, kind of like a cat. Like I just went hide and I'm like, maybe if I just wait it out, no one will notice me.
Your vision is based off of movement and you're just like,
yeah. So no music. And then we cut to, or we kind of seamlessly walk toward Beckett and the gang are kind of off to the side, and they have their own plans, because this whole time, they're not actually part of the Imperial Army. They're pretending to be. Which I think was hard for me.
It's a bold move.
It is a bold move. And Beckett, in a way, is kind of like Han in the future. Mm-hmm. Beckett is bold enough to talk directly to the lieutenant later and make some moves. Like he is definitely like I can see why Han wants to be kind of his understudy, put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I recently got into playing D&D and I was like, yeah, Beckett rolled a charisma, he got a nat 20 and just like walked into this military. Han's not rolling that well at all.
He's still rolling pretty high though in charisma.
Just not comparative to Beckett. True. Or at least their role against each other didn't go well.
True. But I think like Han does see a vision of his future. And especially because of Val as well. And like he sees their relationship, and in the novelization he does say, like, you know, she does remind him of Kira.
Yeah. This Val. Could be us.
Yeah, exactly. Like Val's a little bit older, but the way that she is just down with this whole thing, I have to be honest, it kind of did bother me, the way that, like, the novelization, how do you feel about it?
It's been a long time. Like, I read the novelization as soon as it came out. And so it's been long enough that I don't have all of the smaller details.
Yeah, no worries. Because I read it pretty recently. And the way that, like, of course, the, like, first woman he meets is like, yeah, that could be Kira. And she's so cool. Like, she's so down for the action. Like, as if she's not directly a part of it, too. It's sort of like, I met a cool girl. Wow. That's how it seemed like to me. But, yeah.
I mean, yeah, for sure. Ahan is the old school type of gentleman. Yeah, he probably doesn't recognize that. And of course, that actually plays into the film, where he doesn't see Kira's ambition and that she's changed when he hasn't.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so back to here. The Beckett says a word that I'm not actually sure what they mean in this context. He says, looks like they're running sorties every 30 minutes. And I don't know if they mean like the type of thing that you see in train stations in France. Sorties. Do you know what that means?
That I don't know. I didn't. I heard the word and I just assumed it meant. My natural assumption was that there was there are ships that are coming in and out, meaning we can grab one within this time frame without it being missed. That's kind of what I got from it.
That would make perfect sense. I think sortie means, maybe he's saying like there's departures. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that would make sense. And Val's like, yeah, I can take the guards out at the perimeter, signalman, pilot. Hell, I'll just take them all out. And Han, of course, sticks his nose in their business again. And here, Han shows that he has at least tried to play the game a little bit. Like, he has made a few observations that he's going to try to throw at them in order to convince them to let him join them. So he's like, I couldn't help but notice you're wearing a uniform pock full of laser burns. So either you heal real quick or you stole it off a dead man. You're not Imperial Army. You're thieves here to steal equipment for a job, and I want in. And now we're about to get
a bold move.
Yeah, also, yeah, he's trying. And here Val sticks her gun into his belly and is like, well, now we got to shoot him. And here we get the beginning of another piece of music that I think is interesting, and I think it has a theme in it that I am not sure how I feel about. So let me just play what I'm talking about. This is what we hear. So Beckett's like, no, snap his neck, it's less mess. And Han's like, take me back with you. I came up running scams on the streets of Corellia. I was boosting AV-221s when I was 10. I'm a driver, a flyer, and hey, you said yourself, I gotta get out of here, right? So what do you hear in the background there?
So this is the theme that actually felt a lot more Star Wars-y.
That's because it's the main theme.
That, yeah. But for there, this is, it's very call to action-y.
Huh. Okay. Say more.
This is Luke telling Uncle Owen, like, no, I can go and join them, the Imperial Academy, and like get off this world. Like, it's that I want to get out of here feel. Mm-hmm. At least that's where I go with it.
Yeah, it is the dreaming of something bigger, but still being kind of stuck in the small version of his life. Like, there's also a bit of looking back too, because I mean, here, of course, this is the main Star Wars theme. but it's slowed down. So it's like, okay, so it goes. That's the beginning of the track.
I don't know how to pick up that as a main theme. Slow. As you said, I was like, oh, yeah.
It's slow. It goes. You know, it is presented a little bit differently. And I'm reminded of all the times in A New Hope when we hear the main theme played on woodwinds. And, you know, we various people were joking about it throughout the season. And, well, maybe I came up with this term, but it was like the homespun version of Luke's theme because we don't actually hear it. And it's like all it's a brass glory until he is swinging across the chasm with Leia later. Mm-hmm. Later on. Before then, it's always like this sort of quaint, more delicate version. And this kind of reminds me of that delicate version where it's more like the Lars version of Luke, you know, kind of the hometown Luke. And this is Han recalling his hometown, his upbringing as well. Like, I came up running scams on the streets of Corellia. That's like Luke being like, you know, I used to bullseye womp rats back home. Like, sort of recalling his past and how maybe they're not like where their destiny is. They're not really fully there yet, but they do have bits of their past that show promise. You know, he's kind of giving his resume, his experience here.
Now I wonder if, because if anything, I feel like this theme would probably come back stronger when he does the Kessel run. If anything, if this were to follow suit, and I'm curious if that happens, because now I can't recall.
It definitely comes up more in this film, and it definitely comes up a little bit more boisterously. I will also say in the Corellia chase, there is a bit where it comes in like just this one little burst. It's like really squeezed in there. It's very interesting. In the more triumphant form. Mm-hmm. So people want to listen back to Corellia Chase, which is maybe one of my favorite tracks on the soundtrack. There is this part where the main theme comes in. So like definitely the main theme is used during this, which I'm still working out what to make of it and how to feel about it. I will be making, I will be working on that this whole season as I discover more details.
Did you also, specifically for that, Chase, did you read the book Most Wanted?
No.
I don't know how much it might affect or change things, but since that's early in this movie, that's closest to, so the book Most Wanted.
What's the prequel? Like, what series is it part of?
It's a prequel to Solo, the movie.
Oh, okay.
And so it's a young Han as a white worm. It's him and Kira coming up together. They have a friend that's a Rodian, and they have this like adventure. This is an early attempt of theirs to get out of the life that they're in.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I would be interested to read that. Yeah,
is that Ray Carson? No, Ray Carson did the novelization.
Okay, I'm gonna look that up. White Worm Han for some White Worm Han adventures. The reason I am just the elephant in the room is that John Williams didn't do the score. So like, how the way that we talk about scores that are not John Williams is just fundamentally going to be different. And I'm trying to not spark the kind of conversation that makes every single episode just like a comparison. And so far that hasn't been the case at all, but you know, just in case.
But I'm picking up what you're putting down, it feels weird to inject something that has John Williams' DNA, but it's not his music.
Yes and no. Like, because John Williams co-composed, like John Williams wrote Han's themes for this movie. So John Williams's DNA is everywhere in this film. Like, he wrote the themes, and then John Powell wrote, you know, and also because it's Star Wars and because John, like, it would make more sense to use themes rather than say come up with brand new themes for things that have already been written if mm-hmm. if an existing theme already fits. So it's not that on its own. I find I have I struggle with that more so with how John Williams' themes are sometimes used in the shows, in the TV shows. But in this film, I don't have huge struggles with that. And they really did collaborate on this film. And it was very thoughtful the way that, that it was crafted. But specifically with this theme, it's such a Luke Skywalker theme for me mm-hmm. that, like, that's why I'm having to find new ways to, like, make it fit. And I think so far, like, the way that I make it fit is looking toward the past, you know, kind of incorporating the past into the future and, like, the upbringing and that aspect of it. And also the cross fingers and trust in the Force-ness of it, which even though the Force is not in this film, like, the Force is inescapable in Star Wars. The Force binds us all. So Han thinks that the Force is not in his own film, but it is. It's there. It's just never spoken, you know?
It's true.
You know, so in moments where he is taking a chance, we can put new terminology to it. We can call it Han just taking a gamble.
Yeah, it's rolling with advantage.
So in moments like that, I feel like the main theme or Luke Skywalker's theme is appropriate, or, you know, I can see it working there.
Okay. Yeah. Now, it always is funny to me how...
But it still is Luke's theme to me.
Yes. But, like, once you can rationalize a reason behind it, you know, because it's very much Luke's theme, but, you know, from a step further back, for me at least, Luke is very much Star Wars. And so it becomes Star Wars themes, which don't tell prequel or not. I'm a prequel fan. So I don't. There's. Because of the era that I jumped into Star Wars, which is during the special editions coming out. And this is all we had, you know, this is the entire thing is Luke's story and then a backstory up to that point. So while it is very much Luke's theme, to me, it's also very much Star Wars theme. It's very much the hero's journey theme told through the lens of Star Wars. So I can see it, at least I can logically rationalize it working for Han in this context, because he's, you know, I mean, started out by calling it the call to adventure theme. I guess I had already thought about it without knowing that I was thinking about it. But, you know, he has not become the hero yet. And so it's still
does he become like the a hero? Pale.
He becomes, I suppose, not the hero. It's becoming himself, becoming the Han that we know. Which is still not a hero.
Becoming the Han we know. The real one. The real Han. The one that we know. I definitely hear what you're saying, though.
But that's kind of the odd thing about these films, is because
it is.
Han's journey happens in the original trilogy. So we are watching a movie to get him to the point where he can start his arc.
Yeah.
Just interesting.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is interesting. And the thing, okay, here's another reason why I think it is, I hear you, it is undeniably, it is the Star Wars theme. It literally starts every, you know, soundtrack, you know, except for the anthologies, but it is not actually used in that much. The prequels and sequels don't use that theme very much. It's an OT theme. It's a Luke Skywalker theme. Anakin is not on a hero's journey. Rey is on a hero's journey, but she has her own themes, and it's not the same theme slapped onto her. And so hearing the main title back again which in A New Hope was really a Luke theme. It's just, it makes me think. That's all. And I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. I don't mind it, though. I don't necessarily mind it because I don't mind musical incongruity. And I definitely am not, I definitely actively don't like when themes only match up specifically with their characters. So that, like, I could just turn the audio off, see a character walk in and know, oh yeah, they're playing that character's theme right now. Or like, oh, they're playing that theme. Like, I don't want it to be that obvious where like just the themes match so perfect, like so exactly to everything happening. I think that would be super boring.
Oh, sorry. I just got excited.
I like when there's incongruity because it puts on new layers and I'm a big fan of subtext. Like, I think films are so boring when it's just all so obvious. Like, I think there needs to be subtext. So this subtext, I just haven't like quite put my finger on it yet. Or if there is subtext, it just bothers me when it seems so random that I can't pick up on like a meaning or a pattern to it. But in general, incongruity, I'm fine with. It just makes me need to pause and figure out like how it's developing. Okay, why'd you get excited?
Well, now it's two reasons. I just love people with, I don't know, neurodivergence that reminds me of my own, where you're like, this doesn't fit. Why doesn't this fit? Why is this here? Who put this here? There had to be a reason. You didn't just do this. Like, and then like, I spend like, I'll wake up in the middle of the night like, why was that there? Like, I don't know. That's just me. Either that or I wake up in the middle of the night and be like, okay, if I was accepting a presidential speech, like, what would I write?
Oh, God.
And like, yeah. But no, I got excited for something also kind of random, but at some point I need to hear you talk about the music from The Batman that just came out, because I have a lot of thoughts on it, but I feel like talking to you about it would be incredible.
Moment of truth. I'm not a Batman person. I'm not familiar with all of the Batman stuff, so I wouldn't pick up on much if I saw it.
No.
Or you think I would?
That's just, okay. You absolutely would. You don't have to.
If I only watched Batman and didn't, you know, I saw the Dark Knight trilogy a long time ago. Haven't watched anything else.
Correct. So this is its own take on it. It's not really drawing from other stuff, and I wouldn't expect you, like, I don't notice ties to other Batman properties musically, but the way the music of that film gives us it does give us little elements of that feel Star Wars-y, and then there's a little bit of like Kurt Cobain in there, and then there's thematically Ave Maria is played several times through the film, and like there's just, you would have to listen to it, but the whole thing is, most of it feels like it's from the perspective of the character of Bruce Wayne, not, it's a story being told with Bruce Wayne and Batman in it. And because of that, how he is feeling, what he is experiencing, determines the music at any given moment. And it just kind of, like, you like ride this wave. I think I would love to hear what you glean from it.
Well, now I'm,
that's all.
Now I'm kind of curious to watch it. And I'm glad I didn't click on the spoiler review that I saw last night. That's interesting, because now that you mentioned that thing about the Batman, it makes me think that like I want that for Han, and I wanted that for Boba Fett too, more of a first person. Like, I think that, be careful what I wish for. I don't actually mean I necessarily want this. I would want it if I see it and it's done well, then I will like it. But just an idea that I would pitch, but possibly would be more of a first person perspective. I don't want to see Han do stuff, just like I didn't want to see Boba just do stuff, like someone moving his Lego somewhere. And I know, you know, that's just how it felt to me. But like, I want to know more about, I would like more of a diary entry, like something more something from like a clear perspective. I feel like Han is a little bit opaque, even though we see moments of I know that he cares about stuff. I know that he cares about Kira. I know that we see him get burned and we see him struggle for things. It's not that I'm missing like struggle. I'm just missing. I think I'm missing something though, something personal.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. 1,000 times that. Yeah. It's watching someone's go through their journey versus being them and experiencing their journey. And if that's how you feel, I actually think you would really like
the Batman.
There are parts of it that feel like the documentary of montage of Heck, the Kurt Cobain thing, and like you are watching him write in his diary and seeing some of those words like that happens.
That's my favorite style of something, and like my own music even is like, if I were to describe what my own personal artistic output is, it's like my music is like reading diary entries out loud and having strings playing. That's kind of what I do. Is like some of my music is like I started as voice memos that I recorded myself, and then I build like a experimental like song out of that or something. And I, growing up, I was a sucker. I've said sucker twice in this episode. Interesting. Yeah, vocabulary words. I need to go back to the drawing board a little bit. For those Star Wars books that were like diaries, like Darth Maul's diary and things like that. I feel like there were, and also in the Rogue One novelization, Mon Mothma has like her own, her like the transmissions. Like those are my favorite parts where it's like reading the, and You know that I love the Thrawn books, and the Thrawn is like, it's like diary entries, like is like the first one. Yeah.
Oh man, that's interesting. The lyrics from an old song from the band Brand New, which I know now Jesse Lacey is problematic, which we shouldn't have been surprised now that I think about it. But he says, you know, watch me as I, oh my goodness. Now it.
Brand New?
Watch me. Yeah. The band was called Brand New. Emo band, early 2000s. But watch me as I cut myself wide open on the stage as I'm paid to spill my guts. Is the feel of what you were just saying. Because that's what it is. It's.
Yeah. Give us a little diary entry, Han. Like Dr. Aphra did it. Dr. Aphra, she was a... Anyway. I enjoyed that too. So anyway, not to...
Oh man, the unreliable narrator aspect of Dr. Aphra's diary was just amazing. Of like, all right, never mind. Erase that last part. This is what I actually did. Or whatever. Like, yeah. Anyhow.
I appreciate that in general about... that's actually the unreliable narration of Dr. Aphra is present in every Star Wars media, whether it's like a diary or not, which is why like I think it's interesting, and I take it with a grain of salt when people use what characters have said as canon fact, because
it's what that character believed.
It's what that character said. Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't mean it happened that way. So that itself is not the fact, and in the real world, it's hard to define facts. Sometimes there's a lot of points of view that are valid, and a lot of ways that people may have seen things in different, like in fact, but in different ways. Like in The Last Jedi, there's a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It also makes me think of, you know, Rebels when Darth Maul finally dies. And he asks him, is he the chosen one? And he's like, yes, he is. Of course Obi-Wan says that. People are like, see, that means Lucas. And you're like,
exactly.
Okay. Obi-Wan saw Anakin, who he believed, become Darth Vader and try to murder him. Of course he no longer believes that Anakin is the chosen one.
Yeah, that yeah, that brings up so much. Prophecies are just up to interpretation. There's never going to be an answer on whether Anakin is the chosen one or what that means. There's never going to be an answer. There's just historically what different people believed about it and what happened. That's all we know.
And who wrote the prophecy? And what were they going right. through? And right. that's one thing that's really cool in the book, Brotherhood hasn't even come out yet.
Master and Apprentice.
Yeah,
like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because it takes me to the era that these people wrote this and what they believed, and we can learn things from that.
It's one of my favorite quotes ever. That was like one of my favorite quotes.
That was like, oh my God, I didn't need to study history now.
Yeah. And in a way, like in these Star Wars stories where they really serve not really to move the main plot, but more to give us quote unquote historical background behind these characters like Han, it's filling in those, it's taking us to the place of what people at that time believed to be true about the world. Mm-hmm. And that's how I go into movies like Solo, which I didn't enjoy it as much as the other, you know, Disney era films, because it's just the genre, the type of movie it is not for me. And but I still enjoyed it as a person who loves learning about the world of Star Wars. Just to me, it felt a little bit more like a documentary, or just like a something that I'm, you know, enjoying because it helps me understand the greater picture more, you know, not necessarily as like its own encapsulated story. Like I wasn't like gripped by the plot.
It's not the thing. It's a thing surrounding the thing. You know?
Yeah. 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 So, that's about it for these. No, I forgot a big part after this, after this blackmail track starts playing, which of course is when Han tries to blackmail them, and it really doesn't work. Rio or Han says, you know, the lieutenant might be interested in you or whatever. And Beckett just one-ups him and is like, turns him in basically.
With the utmost confidence of just like, utmost officer, confidence. Come here. You're like, oh man. Like,
lieutenant, we've apprehended a deserter. Take him.
And don't believe anything he says. You're like,
yeah. And so the stormtroopers drag him and we hear, feed him to the beast. And Han's like, the beast? Wait, there's a beast? And then it really, the whole blackmail 1M11 track finishes out. In the end, we hear this dramatic crescendo. So there, I don't know if you could hear it, but you could hear like each beat, like a different instrument was coming in with an accent. So it was like boom, 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 layering one at a time. Yeah. Let me play that again, because I think it's an interesting like orchestrational thing. Like really each beat is a new instrument coming in on an accent, and then they stay there. So by the end, there's like, I don't know how many, say 10, but they came in one at a time and then just sustained.
And just sustained, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like...
Yeah. I didn't pick up on that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like that.
It kind of gives it like not only a sense of, because there are many ways to do a crescendo, like to make something louder. You could have everyone start playing at the same time, but everyone is softer, and then everyone increases in volume at the same time. And that gives you a very smooth, that gives you like a smoother crescendo, but this still has like the texture of, it still has like rhythm to it because of the staggered accents.
Yeah, I kind of just like, thought of it as everyone races on specific like percussive beats, but this is actually a lot better than that, and it makes me feel like, I don't know, my dad was big into like Motown and stuff like that, so those layered stuff like that always tickles me.
It reminds me of like hello.
And then you end up with jazz hands.
Yeah, you have to. You end up with jazz hands, or you end up in the Wookiee pen.
Yes, in a big old thing of mud. Which, does this canonically mean that Chewbacca eats people?
Maybe. Like, I don't know. I mean, they really are setting him up like he's a Rancor.
Are we implying that this is the first person that they've thrown in there with the beast? Or has there been more? Do they throw all deserters to the beast? That's kind of weird.
It is. Well, they haven't fed him in 3 days. So he ate something 3 days ago. But was it a person? We don't know. It could have been.
Is this a ploy to make me a vegetarian?
Or maybe just stop being a cannibal.
Yeah.
Well, we don't really meet Chewbacca here. This is just the end of the minutes is when Han is thrown in there and sort of like, wait, there's a beast. There's a beast. Yeah. And he gets shut in. And of course, in the next, like next week, we'll see who it is. We'll see the Wookiee. And, but yeah, he really just is set up as a beast.
Yeah. And I did think that that was a cool introduction, but I will let y'all jump into that next week.
Yes. And the spoiler, Han and Chewie will have music. They will have music for their adventures, for their friendship.
Indeed.
So, is there anything else about these minutes? Musically, sonically, sound effects, thematically, that you didn't mention?
I mean, seeing Han's commanding officer get blown up was intense. But no, other than that, it was a simpler scene that was driven more by outside, you know, factors than the music itself, you know, being in the middle of a war zone. And of course, you know, they understand the importance of also playing with quiet moments as well and letting the music, you know, build up and fade out and have that natural ebb and flow. So, yeah.
What is your favorite part of the movie?
Favorite part of this movie?
Or like what you said, this wasn't your favorite part of the film, but there are, you did enjoy it. So what else? What was your main takeaway from the film?
So I loved the scenes with the cloud riders, with the Infest Nest specifically, but also any scene with Lando that's inside of any sort of bar. I feel like Donald Glover's energy. I mean, I've been following him forever. So his energy in playing the character, I thought, was just perfect. And while he didn't play him like Billy Dee, he felt very, very much like Lando.
Yeah. I'm excited to get to the Lando minutes. And I'm going to be pondering what it is about his performance that made me believe a little bit more. It could really just be that we didn't see very much of Billy Dee Williams in the originals. Like, he is not as present of a character as Han Solo, obviously. And so it might be that this genuinely did flesh him out more. Whereas we already knew a lot about Han, so it'd be hard to, like, unless you really gave us something super juicy and personal, it'd be hard. It's harder to flesh out Han because we already get his arc. But Lando, we haven't seen much yet. So anything is like a learning moment for him still.
Yeah, it's all, but I mean, on top of that, I just feel like he really hit his comedic moments and he hit his, you know, when they're sitting there and his ship hat got like an impound boot on it. And he's, you know, I don't like it.
I think I love
it. I don't agree with it, but I accept it. Yeah, he just, timing wise, the acting and just his energy. And you just, I guess I haven't seen a whole ton of behind the scenes footage that they probably wouldn't show it because of the problems that was happening on set. But it just felt like he has great chemistry with all the other actors there. And I think that makes a difference.
Definitely. Well, are you ready to move on to the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, it's the same three questions that I ask every guest. And question number one, is, in exactly three words, what does Star Wars sound like?
Hope, redemption, and spirituality.
Nice. Number two, what's something related to Star Wars music or sound that you're curious about or want to learn more about?
I've seen some of the Brett Bird stuff, but just the creation of the engineer aspect of it, where you do a sound for this doesn't exist. How do you decide what that thing sounds like? What it sounds like in space, in atmosphere? Like, I think that's fascinating.
Someone else had an answer. I mean, a lot of people have said something, some variation of that, but someone phrased it as like, how do you go from like it doesn't exist to it exists? Like, you don't have a sound for it. It's not a real thing, but then it just somehow happens. Kind of like how stories happen. Like, how do stories just happen? Like, yeah, that whole mystery of making a sound come to life that is not just trying to copy like a horse sound or trying to just, you know, footsteps is one thing, but creating like a Wookiee is another thing or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And finally, what's a score or soundtrack that you're fond of besides anything Star Wars?
I want to choose something different than last time. I'm pretty sure I know what I chose last time.
I don't think I asked this question. I wasn't asking this question the first season, so you've never answered it officially.
Oh, okay. Well, then I will go with my first answer. And it's mostly because of nostalgia. I used to snowboard a lot, like a lot. And I would always play the soundtrack from the first Pirates of the Caribbean as I was snowboarding. And it's amazing. Carving through trees as like the main theme. And you feel so damn heroic. Like,
nice. That sounds fun. Except I can't snowboard. So for me, I would only have to, I probably shouldn't put on heroic music for when I snowboard. Or I'm going to really hurt myself.
Yeah, just max volume. And we're carving through trees. And it's dun 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 dun. And you're just like trying to like jump off of things on beat and stuff like that. Oof. It's just, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I have a little bit of a bonus question. In this set of minutes, what would you encourage listeners to just pay more attention to the next time they watch Solo? Like, maybe it could be something we talked about or something we didn't talk about. Just like, yeah.
Yeah, just pay attention to how the music changes in order to, like, it's musical ducking against comedy. Mm. Or it's the music understanding that this is marching up to this thing, and in this there's going to be comedy bits. So now the music is going to have a little swing, little jaunt to it. Okay, so now they're going to charge up the hill. So cut that out. And now it's a heroic charge. But, you know, that being able to account for conversation in such a thematic like music is really cool to me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on for your second guest appearance on Star Wars Music Minute. Where can people find you?
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you again for having me. Hopefully not for my last time, because I always have fun and learn a bunch of stuff here. But yeah, I'm Darth Chaco. Darth Chaco on YouTube. Darth Chaco on TikTok. Darth Chaco 7 on Twitter. And that's probably all the places. I don't really post to Instagram anymore. But yeah, you can find me there. I also host the High Ground podcast. We just kind of pick a Star Wars related topic, and I bring on a bunch of guests to talk about that topic.
And I've been on a couple times, so you could check those episodes out.
Also, if I recall, you're a big Revenge of the Sith nerd.
Yes.
And I have that episode coming up soon. So if you might be inclined.
I'm a big Revenge of the Sith person.
So yeah, we should be able to make that happen soon. Yeah, it's a great time. It's live on YouTube Wednesdays at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, and you can also find it wherever pods are being cast. Thank you again.
Thank you. And listeners, you can find me on Star Wars Music Minute or Star Wars Musement on Twitter. And you can leave me a message, a voice message at the comlink at StarWarsMusicMinute.com/comlink. You can support the show by becoming a patron, or you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or anything else of that sort. I actually think Apple Podcasts is the only place that collects reviews, so never mind. But yeah, you could do that. And next week, we'll be back to talk about minutes 21 through 25 of Solo, A Star Wars Story. And may the Force be with you.